Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me tonight is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back. How is everything going? It has been a crazy busy summer, but all eyes ahead now to the upcoming college football season.
Paul, I cannot wait. This is one of those nights that we have prepared for all summer. I mean, I think listeners are about to listen to what I would consider to be an entire summer's worth of work, but also an entire summer's worth of trying to keep a lid on it, trying to make sure that we have something to talk about tonight. Not just the listeners, but also you, Paul. I'm trying to make sure you don't know what I'm doing, so that way we can have a chance to really discuss some of these players and figure out where they win and how they project at the next level and really who we should be keeping our eyes on this upcoming season. So I'm really excited. I cannot wait to start.
Yeah, I mean, and if you guys have been listening all summer long, you know, it has been a really busy summer here at Saturday to Sunday Football. You know, Matt put together that 11-part summer seminar series on skill acquisition, movement skills. Absolutely tremendous feedback we've gotten from people who are intrigued by that, you know, in terms of how they're evaluating, you know, and found it really fascinating series. You know, after that, we went into the Summer Stock Report series, which was those mini podcasts that I delivered just kind of setting the stage for all the NFL training camps opening, you know, our thoughts on who we should be buying, selling, holding, stock up, stock down. You know, we never really get a chance too often to talk about the NFL guys. So we thought it was maybe a fresh perspective, a new set of, you know, opinions to kind of share on that. And in between there, we were also very fortunate to have Heath Cummings from CBS Sports. And along this entire journey of the summer, Matt and I have been off to the side watching film. Lots and lots of film. That's our favorite passion to do in preparation for the release of the 2019 Premium Notebooks, which will be available in the late part of August. The 2019 Scouting Notebook is almost already completed. Obviously, a lot of edits and updates throughout the year, a lot of players added, you know, transition to more of a draft notebook after the season, once we know who's declaring, who's not. But, you know, we're about like 60, 70 guys into that. And we're just about almost fully done with that. And we're going to get right into our positional preview shows tonight. We're going to start at the wide receiver position. Tonight will be part one. You know, we'll see how many guys we get through. We'll have at least a part two, potentially a part three, just for the wide receivers. We're going to talk, you know, throughout these podcasts, probably about 25 draft eligible prospects that we've had our eyes on. We'll mention some underclassmen, you know, at the end of the wide receiver podcast. We'll give our rankings, maybe like our top 10, top 12, just to kind of set the stage for what we think about these guys. And then obviously all our rankings will be able to be found in the new series of notebooks that will be out. We have a couple great sponsors in the works for later part of August and early in September. We're really excited and look forward to that as well. So Matt, let's just kind of get right into it here. The wide receiver position, any general thoughts before we start bringing up an individual player as a whole for what you think of this class?
No, so as a whole, as an entire class, when you look at it from beginning to end, I think people are going to see a lot of scintillating, amazing traits, physical traits. If you're a physical traits connoisseur and you think that you can't possibly replicate anybody that could approximate Calvin Johnson unless he's 6'4", well, I've got like 7 or 8 guys that are 6'4" in this class. If you're like, well, he's got to be like literally just exploding with muscle and outstanding athleticism, I think there's like 2 or 3 guys with that profile. So I think the one thing I'll say about this class is initially, from a 35,000-foot view, this looks like the class of classes in terms of their physical profiles. I think when you get into the skill level of these players, I think you're going to see that there is a tier of players that are a certain caliber above. I will say that the middle tier of this class, the average player in this class, is a very intriguing player. But from a skill level standpoint, I think you're going to find that the average player is probably, again, a very much a complementary player. I don't think we have too many transcendent players here right out of the gate. Could they develop into transcendent players? If you're willing to play the projection game, sure. Sure. We have guys with physical traits galore. And if you're willing to play that projection card, I think there's a lot of guys that are going to be intriguing. So this is the type of class where I'm going to say is you could take a lot of shots early or you could sit back and wait, but you can get your guy no matter where you are in the draft this year when it comes to wide receivers. I really do think there's a lot of different players for a lot of different systems and a lot of different teams.
Yeah, I mean, and my big picture take from watching these guys as well was in this past year, there wasn't a lot of guys that fit the prototype. You know, we talked all about it, that there wasn't a lot of those guys that had the ideal body types that you wanted to become wide receiver ones. I think this draft class offers a little bit more of those physical traits that we always hope to see at the wide receiver position. And I think the talent and the skill level is intriguing. Am I going to say right now that this is going to rival the 2014 class, which is the greatest wide receiver class I feel like I've seen in my lifetime? I'm not ready to say that. I think there's a lot of guys with upside, a lot of potential, a lot of guys that have traits that you were talking about and have the physical appearance of what we look for at the position, which we were kind of missing in this past draft class in 2018. So it's exciting. And let's get right into it. I know the first guy we had eyes on was J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford. He's a senior. He's 6'2", 225 pounds. Matt, what was your take on Arcega-Whiteside?
Well, I think when you look at his strengths and weaknesses, from a strength standpoint, he's got the size. His ability on deep routes is very good. I think that's where his strength lies. He is really good when it comes to running deep routes. I think he's deceptive when it comes to running deep routes. I think he can high point the football well. He has good sense of that spatial kind of timing element when it comes to being good at high pointing the football and also dominating the leverage of the opposing DB. He's got that ability. So he's good on deep routes. Run blocking, I think, was very good. I think he was always a stout blocker, good solid base, really knew how to establish the point of contact and create running lanes. Body control was something that I thought he had a very good feel for. That was another strength of his, and his catch radius. So when you look at him from a strength standpoint, you got the size, his ability on deep routes, run blocking, body control, catch radius. As far as weaknesses go, acceleration. You're not talking about a tremendously high accelerating type of player. He's not a guy who wins at the line of scrimmage. He's not an explosive player at the line of scrimmage. From a release standpoint, I think his releases versus the press are something that I really didn't think were that great. I think he utilized solid to good balance and good coordination to execute, you know, two-handed swats and pull-throughs with like stutter steps and double stick moves, but he never really seemed to get immediate separation at the line of scrimmage. High speed change of direction routes, not really his thing. That wasn't something that I thought he was strong. And his in-breaking routes left something to be desired as well. So when I look at him overall as a player and where he might fit in the NFL, I think he's best suited to a play action kind of vertical passing game where he can live in the slot and utilize that mental processing, that size, and that speed, that deep speed, to really attack the deep areas of the field. I think you're looking at a potential red zone weapon who's really, he's really adept at back shoulder throws. And I think that could be something that could be his calling card when we're talking about tight areas of the field in that red zone area, or even as a chain mover, he could be very effective. I think you're looking at a depth player, somebody who's going to be a little bit more in that fourth or fifth area of the depth chart. And I think he's going to go probably on day three. I think he's an early day three pick because I think he's going to put up numbers this year that I think are going to still intrigue. And that 6'2", 225 frame, I think he's going to be very intriguing for NFL players and NFL teams that are looking especially for a good blocker at the wide receiver position. I think he's going to be a guy that could be good for like an outside zone running team. So that's kind of where I sat with him.
Yeah, I mean, most of my takes were very similar to yours. I did have some concern about separation quickness in his routes. I don't think that is going to be, you know, his calling card. I'm right there with you. I think he's going to win with his size, his frame, his play strength, you know, his ability at the catch point. I was intrigued by the fact that I thought he was a solid threat vertically down the field, but I didn't think he had great speed vertically. So I think he does it more, you know, with his, you know, his ability to win vertically down the field, but I don't think it's so much that he's creating it by his vertical speed, so to speak. I'm right there with you. I think maybe a big slot type player, possession type wide receiver on the outside, but that's kind of what I see for Arcega Whiteside. I think he could maybe change the narrative a little bit this year, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that I think, you know, you can put him out on the outside and he's going to be able to win, you know, with his athleticism and his speed and quickness vertically down the field. Before, you know, we kind of move on in terms of that, like, is that did you see this similarly? Like, are there some concerns in your part in terms of like vertical speed? Do you think he can win vertically down the field, but more with his ability in terms of his route running and his size and play strength? Or do you think he has some like actual vertical speed to like get behind defenses?
No. And I think you hit it right on the head there. And to all the listeners out there, you're going to hear a lot of this tonight. Like, we're going to be going back and forth on some of these players because, again, we don't know what each other writes. This is kind of our first time comparing notes. I think the reason why I consider him a good deep threat is because he does the details well. I thought he did a good job stacking DBs. He tracked the ball well. He didn't have to lose speed, turn around in order to track it. He could track it through his eyelid, so to speak. He could see the ball coming in while he was still maintaining full speed. He was the type of guy that I thought understood how to adjust the tempo on his deep routes in order to maintain that leverage over the defender so that way he could dominate at the catch point. And I think it's that idea that he was able to create dominance at the catch point. So that's where I would put him. Paul, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to throw this one at you if you don't mind. I'm going to throw one out at you.
Sure.
You and I are both kind of sitting here really feeling good about this next player. I think actually to our surprise, because I don't think either one of us knew who he was until we started looking at him, and that's Tyree Brady. He's a junior. He's at Marshall. He's 6'3", 201. Paul, last year he had 62 receptions for 942 yards and 8 touchdowns. I mean, when you look at him, he transferred from Miami in 2015 and sat out the 2017 season. And to say that I think he hit the ground running with gangbusters is to say the least. Paul, what did you think of Tyree Brady when you saw him?
Yeah, I mean, I know Tyree Brady was a really fundamentally sound wide receiver. You know, there were things I liked about him. I thought he had good size and frame. I really liked his ball tracking ability. I thought he did a really good job at getting vertically down the field, being able to adjust and high point the ball well. I liked his hands. I thought he did a solid to, you know, above average in terms of his route running ability. Same thing with his athleticism. Did his athleticism blow me away? Absolutely not. Same thing with his route running. I thought it was okay. I think there's room for improvement there. I think he can refine those areas. But in terms of his strengths, I really kept coming back to His body control, the ability to make adjustments in air, to track the ball down the field, his ability to get vertical using his hands in his routes and then showing good hands at the catch point. I thought he did a good job being able to get open against zone coverage. My concerns, I didn't see a lot of yards after catch type ability. I didn't really see a lot of change of direction, you know, agility, stuff like that after the catch. But all in all, I came away pretty pleased. I had a Marvin Jones-like vibe from him when I watched his game. And I think Marvin Jones is a guy in the NFL who continually puts up solid numbers and doesn't really – everyone seems to think like he's not all that good. And I understand he wasn't, you know, great in Cincinnati, but he's really made a name for himself with the Lions. And I'm not saying Brady's going to go on to have the career that Marvin Jones has had, but I feel like his style of play in terms of what Marvin Jones is really good at, his ability to make plays in the air, to get vertical, I feel like Brady has very much – those type of traits and similarities. I don't think anybody mistakes Marvin Jones at the NFL level for being this great route runner or having this explosive athleticism. I don't think Brady does either, but I do like the things that he does, and I think that's a comparable guy. I think he's a complimentary player. I think he's still probably a day three type guy, but I did come away a lot more impressed because I didn't really know much about him until I really watched him on film. What do you see in Brady?
Well, no, I mean, to add to that, I would agree with everything that you said. And I think when you start looking at his common alignments, this was a guy who lived at the number one position. He was aligned mostly outside the formation. So you're talking about a guy in that traditional wide receiver one role for his respective team. And he really ran a nice route tree, slants, curls, corners, goes, deep posts. But I agree with you, Paul. I actually have listed as his weaknesses, change of direction, speed, yards after catch, and route deception. That's something that you're going to hear a lot from me tonight. Route deception. What the hell is route deception? Route deception is really where I tried to take a lot of what we learned in the seminar series, and I tried to start actioning it. Like, I'm trying to be courageous here, guys. I'm trying to go out on a limb and learn from other people about what, you know, we understand about skill acquisition. How can we apply it to evaluation? And route deception means I'm looking at how versatile, how much do they change their ability to run routes? Do they use head fakes, shoulder fakes? Do they use stick moves? Do they vary tempo? Do they vary the combination of tempo, head fakes, and stick moves? So I'm looking at how variable can the wide receiver be? In other words, how adaptable is he? And I've encompassed that in the word called route deception. So how much route deception did we see from Tyree Brady when he was running routes? And I thought it was below average. I didn't really see a lot of route deception. I saw below average to solid route deception. I thought he utilized the initial track, which is very important, as well as head fakes to deceive defenders. But I thought he really relied on play strength to disengage from players that were trying to mix him up. He really relied on play strength. So when I look at him as a player, Paul, I'm 100% in agree with you. I think it's complimentary or a depth player. I think he belongs in the slot or the flanker role. He's best suited, in my opinion, to a vertical passing game. And he's another guy that I think could be very good in the red zone. But to your point, he's easily overlooked. Easily.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that's one of the things sometimes when you really start making lists and then, you know, spending the time on these guys, I think you find some guys who have some traits and some little hidden gems that, you know, you come across and you're like, wow, I'm kind of intrigued by some of the skill sets that he offers. So let's turn to a name that everybody knows and has been talked about for quite some time, and that is AJ Brown from Ole Miss. Obviously, he's a junior, 6'1", 225. I mean, elite production last year, 75 catches, you know, over 1,200 yards, 11 touchdowns. He seems to be one of, you know, the top handful consensus top wide receivers right now heading into this upcoming college football season, you know, and then in turn looking big picture, you know, at the 2019, you know, NFL draft. What's your take on AJ Brown? I know he's been a guy we've had some conversations with on air, but after doing, you know, a thorough film analysis over the summer, you know, spotlighting him, what do you think?
So my opinion is I think you really have to understand the context with which he actually lives in on the football field. And what I mean by that is, let's start right there at Ole Miss. Phil Longo is a great offensive coordinator, but we know that Phil Longo is very much an option route heavy coach. He enjoys those. He wants his receivers to make decisions on the fly when they're playing the position. That's no small task for a wide receiver to do. They have to have good attention to what's happening in front of them, and then they have to make decisions throughout their route stem as to what to do. And that can be very, very taxing on a wide receiver. But A.J. Brown does this with ease, so to speak, and that's really to his testament. His common alignments, this is something that really you have to pay attention to. Most of the time, he was off the line of scrimmage in the number two wide receiver role. What that means is that means that he was inside of the number one receiver. In other words, if you're thinking about the football being on one of the hash marks, he would be the second wide receiver into the sideline. That's where he would be listed. And he really ran mostly slants, pivots, quick outs, and bubble screens. And that was his role, and that's where he lived. So when you look at the context with which he played football at Ole Miss, you're talking about a guy that lived in a very, very, very limited role. But I think that's not necessarily to his detriment. So let me go ahead and talk about his strengths. His strengths, it's really his muscular build, his play strength, hands, and body control. His weaknesses, separation quickness, agility, and blocking. When I look at him as a player, overall, I'll say this. This is a guy who wins because of play speed. He's a guy who understands what's happening in front of him. Remember I said Phil Longo was a guy who really was a big, big believer in option routes. He understands what's happening in front of him, and it's that play speed, which is a testament to his mental processing or his football acumen, that I think is what's really going to transfer to the next level. He understands what's happening in front of him, and I think that goes to great length when it comes to being an adequate to really high, above average player at the next level. And when I look at him as where he's going to really flourish at the NFL level, I'm going to tell you it's going to be after the catch. I think he's very good after the catch. I don't know if he's really particularly agile. I don't know if he's going to be the guy that's going to elude every defender on the football field, but I don't think he has to. I think he has tremendous play strength. He's a strong, physical guy. I mean, you're talking about, again, a player 6'1", 225, who's already very muscular and physically built. This guy's going to be able to win with strength, and he's going to be able to win with agility in the open field, and he's going to be able to create yards after the catch. I really think, Paul, this is going to be a guy that I predict to be like an Anquan Boldin type, and I'm not shying away from that. I think he's an Anquan Boldin type through and through.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things right there that I 100% agree with. For me, I think he's a guy. You mentioned Anquan Boldin. I'll bring up another guy. I'll bring up two guys, and one people are going to want to drive off the road and say, "Oh God, no!" And then one are going to be like, "Okay, I'm all in." And I think he gives me a lot of vibes on the positive side of Juju Smith. I see that. I've heard that comps. I agree with it. And listen, we were saying Juju Smith gave us Anquan Boldin vibes, so we're all in the same vein right there.
Same family.
But the other name, and this is where everyone's going to cringe, but let's not cringe about who he is as an NFL player. I get a lot of Leonte Carew vibes. This is how Leonte Carew won, I think, in college. I think he was better in the slot. He had great size, physicality. He did things after the catch, not with like great elusiveness and change of direction skills, but a combination of that power, that play strength, you know, some agility, some burst. And Leonte Carew was a great wide receiver at Rutgers when he was in college. Now, it hasn't translated to the NFL, but there was a lot of teams that were really high on him, and the Dolphins being one of them, trading up for him. So I get that vibe with A.J. Brown. I get that, you know, Anquan Boldin, you know, Juju Smith, Leonte Carew can play a little bit on the outside, can play in the slot, going to win with that size, physicality, you know, break tackles, that play strength after the catch, some burst and quickness. He's not going to be a guy who's going to test out and run a 4.44 or anything like that. No, absolutely not. He's not going to test fantastically, you know, in the change of direction drills at the combine either, because he doesn't always win just with separation quickness. That might be average, to be honest with you. You know, and somebody might even say it's slightly below average, and I wouldn't strongly disagree. But he's going to win with his route running ability combined with his play strength. He uses his body, I think, really well to out-muscle, you know, position himself correctly, you know, and I think it's going to translate to the next level. You know, I think he's a guy who's going to be an effective player. Do I know if he should be a slam dunk round one guy? I'm not ready to say that yet. I'd like to see his game, you know, a little bit more refinement this year, but could I see him late round one to somewhere into, you know, round two, middle of round two? Sure. I mean, I think that's where he lives right now. I think we see him pretty similarly, and I think he's going to be a guy to kind of follow this year and see if he changes at all the narrative, or what we see is what we get. And that's just going to be, okay, what does the NFL think of him? How does he test next year and go from there? Any final thoughts on AJ Brown?
No, I think you're spot on. I have him as a day two pick. I think he's a starter caliber player. I think he starts for whatever team drafts him. At least he should, at least. And I think he's best suited to a kind of a play action West Coast option route based scheme. I think that's where he belongs, and that's where I think he's going to flourish. So, Paul, I'm actually really excited, though. I'm excited because, I don't know, I feel like this is a player where you mentioned that, like, you're like, I mean, we know the film is very limited. We know the film is very limited. I mean, everybody out there knows what it's like trying to gather film for these players. And this guy is no exception. Paul, I think you had lightning bolts maybe around his name when you sent me and you're like, man, Marquise Brown. That's right. Marquise Brown, the Oklahoma product. He's a junior. He's 5'10". He's 162 pounds. Last year, he had 57 receptions for 1,095 yards and 7 touchdowns. And that was his first year with the Sooners. He was a JUCO transfer that year. And he's a player that's currently on the Biletnikoff watch list for the top wide receiver award in the country. And Paul, I think you're going to agree that he belongs there. What did you think about Mr. Marquise Hollywood Brown?
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood Brown, I mean, the name fits him perfectly. I mean, the transfer there to Oklahoma and just exploding onto the scene last year, you know, again, let's start with the concerns. His frame is obviously a concern. He's 162 pounds right now, you know, as of the weight that we currently know. He's going to have to get that up. You know what I mean? Like, by the time he gets to the combine next year, if he came out or 2 years out, you know, he's going to have to get that up to probably the 175, 180 in particular. So that's obviously a concern right now. He's got to, you talked a little bit before, you know, in terms of overall route package, he's got to develop more of a route tree for sure. I mean, that is clearly, you know, what he's got to do. He's got to refine his route running, develop more of a route tree. You know, the play strength kind of goes hand in hand with his frame. You know, those are legitimate concerns, but let's not always harp so much on the negatives and the concerns and the flaws. Cause I think when we do that, we lose focus on the rare traits that maybe they possess on the other side, on the strength side. And this is a guy who I think is going to test out as a great elite type athlete in terms of speed, quickness, burst. I think his elusiveness in the open field is tremendous. To me, I saw some plays that it looked like LeSean McCoy / Barry Sanders, you know, with his ability to change directions and make people miss in the open field. You know, his agility, his lateral quickness, his change of direction, you know, I thought was all top notch. His ability to get vertical and be a playmaker, the tactical value that he's going to bring to a team, you know, would be tremendous. You know, teams would have to really account for him. I think he'd also be effective on, you know, screens, crosses, slants, things to get him in, you know, get him the ball and then take advantage of that playmaking ability, you know, after the catch. Listen, you watch him play, and these are the guys that came to my mind, and everyone's going to know these guys. D.D. Westbrook, John Brown, Tyler Lockett, John Ross, Marquise Goodwin. those are the guys that I think he could live in. Now, some of those guys were a little bit more refined route runners. Tyler Lockett in particular, out of that list that I just talked about, was a little bit more of a refined route runner. But I think that's the world that he lives in, where he can be a playmaker that can stretch the field vertically. You know, so you want to say Dede Westbrook, John Ross, John Brown, like those are more guys that maybe his body type and his route running, you know, acumen is where he kind of sits right now. But I threw in Goodwin and Lockett too, because, you know, I think they're all in the same world. That's how I see him. I think he's a guy that will intrigue NFL teams as a day two pick because of his rare calling cards and traits. That's my take, Matt. What do you think about him?
So I really don't differentiate too much on you. I mean, in terms of the weaknesses, and let me define weaknesses and strengths just for 1 second. If we're saying something, or if I'm saying something is a strength, or if Paul's saying something is a strength, it means that that is something that is above average. It means that it's better than just an average NFL player. So it doesn't mean, if I don't mention he's good, let's say at high speed change of direction routes, let's say he's not good at hitches, it doesn't mean that he's not good enough to compete at the NFL level. It just means he's not exceptional. He's not above the average. So when we're saying strengths and weaknesses, I think it's really important to understand what we mean by that. Strengths are going to be things that are above average, whereas weaknesses are things that we think are distinctly below average, at least for me. And for that reason, I think his route deception, his blocking are really things that I thought were below average. Obviously, his size. And also, I'll also mention there was very limited exposures when it came to man situations, playing against press coverage, man situations, as well as contestant situations. I didn't really have great exposures for those. So I can't really speak to that. But to echo what Paul said, outstanding athlete. I think he's going to test very well. For whatever that's worth to everybody out there, I think he's going to be testing very well. But to Paul's point, I didn't see a lot of route deception because I didn't see a very advanced route tree. So what does that mean for me? It means that I think Hollywood Brown is a great player and he has a lot of tactical value. It's just that I'm not necessarily sure if he's going to be a player that I'm leveraging all of my draft assets as a team or organization to go get. And that doesn't mean that he's not a good player. It just means that he has a very specific role, a calling card, just like Paul says all the time, a calling card. And for me, that puts me late day two. I think he's a fourth round pick. That's where I slot him when I look at him as a player. He was most of the time lined up in the number two area, which means he's off the line of scrimmage inside the number one or wide receiver one position. He was utilized in his smoke screens, curls, crosses, wheels, pivots, posts. And it's no secret that Oklahoma is an air raid system where they create and fabricate space for players to run open with. So when I look at Marquise Brown and I think about him and what he was able to accomplish at the collegiate level so far, I see a player who flourished in a system. That doesn't mean he's a system player. It just means that we have to properly weight the system versus what he did on the football field. So I leave it there, Paul. I've got really nothing else to say on him. Why don't we move on and take a look at the next player that we have going on? And this is a player that I'm going to throw out there to everybody. It's Paris Campbell. Paris Campbell from Ohio State is a senior. He's 6'1", 208. And Paul, I'm going to take liberty on this one. I'm just going to start right into him.
Yeah, I'm just going to get right into him.
Last year, he had 40 receptions, 584 yards, and 3 touchdowns. When I talk about his above average, his strengths, I'm talking about acceleration, change of direction speed, and his releases versus off coverage. When I talk about his weaknesses, I want to tell you it's his play strength and his blocking. When I look at him as an athlete, I think you're going to talk about a guy who's he has good athletic ability. He's got good balance, good flexibility, solid to good explosiveness, solid to good acceleration, and solid to good change of direction speed and solid agility. And when you look at what he was used and where he was used primarily in that Curtis Samuel H-back role for Ohio State. He was mostly aligned off the line of scrimmage in the slot in that number three position when it was trips, and he usually was motioned quite a number of times from that number one to number two position. His most of his route tree was like jet sweeps, bubbles, slants, quick outs, and goes. This is a player, when you look at him on film, I hate to say it, I think we're having a lot of projectability when it comes to Paris Campbell. He's a player who intrigues in terms of what he could be. And I think of Curtis Samuel when I think about him. I mean, when I look at his overall kind of comparisons, I think I have him right now somewhere between Curtis Samuel and Nelson Agholor. And that might drive people kind of weird. Like, how do you think he's Nelson Agholor? Well, because I think there's an opportunity for him to develop a little bit more in terms of his route running, in terms of his capabilities as a route runner. And I think he's a guy who, when you look at him, he has solid deception within his routes. He extends upon the leverage that's afforded to him by initial formations. He uses head, shoulder, and lower body fakes throughout the vertical stem, and he understands how to destabilize a defensive back. He understands how to expand zones when it's zone coverage, and he understands how to put guys that are in man coverage on skates, meaning he knows how to make them unsettled in what their responsibility is in a given play. And I think that's what makes me project him a little bit more to being a very good player. He's a guy that, out of all of my ranking players, Paul, he's a guy that I project as being very good.
Before I give my thoughts on him, one quick thing about what do you think about his overall route tree? You know, did you see that, you know, because I felt when I was watching him that, you know, everything was seemed to be very manufactured type touches. Did you get a feel for, you know, his route running ability, or, you know, we've been talking about that, his route deception, like, mm-hmm. you know, what is your take on that? Like, is he a guy that could develop into just an exclusive slot wide receiver, or it was hard to really get a feel for that based on how they've utilized him up until this point?
Well, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think that's where I put him. I mean, I put him in the slot, and I think he's a complementary player. So in terms of where he was on the football field, I mostly saw him in jet sweeps, bubbles, slants, quick outs, and goes. So I saw him in those roles particularly. And when I saw him running those roles, I thought his route deception, as I said earlier, I think it was solid. I think it was solid because I think he used a lot of different parts of his body to kind of really be deceptive. Use his head, use his shoulders, use tempo, use stick moves. I think he was fairly deceptive in his route tree. So what that means to me is as an analyst, I'm kind of sitting there like you. I'm like, well, he must have a really good feel for what's happening on the football field. Now, if that was manufactured, to your point, well, I'm not going to ding him on it. And what I mean by that is, if it was manufactured, it means it might be what was created in practice for him. And in that moment, he picked up on it and he exploited it. He understood it and he took advantage of it. So from my perspective, good coaching, if that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you watch Campbell, what I walked away with, because I saw him exactly like you. I mean, playmaker, versatile, can line up as a running back.
What day did you have him on? Did you have day one, day two, day three? What do you have?
I think he could be a guy who could go late day two, if not mm-hmm. early day three. I think, you know, I like you had, that's where, you know, either Curtis Samuel was overdrafted a little bit a couple years ago. The one thing I do like about Campbell, I think he's got a little bit more size than these type of guys. We've seen guys like Curtis Samuel. I mean, look at where Tavon Austin went. I mean, you can say he could, you know, if he was utilized with touches like Tavon Austin was at West Virginia, I think Paris Campbell has a skill set that, you know, could do that. You know, even I wrote down Nyheim Hines. What NC State did with Nyheim Hines, I think they can do with Paris Campbell. He just hasn't been as much of a focal point of an offense as Curtis Samuel, Nyheim Hines, and Tavon Austin were when they were at college. But what I like about him is this guy isn't like thin or lacking. He's 280. He's 208 pounds. He's got a solid build to him, which, I mean, I think allows him to withstand the rigors. If he ends up being exclusively a slot guy with just a little bit else, his body type, I think, shows off that he has the capability not to get pushed off his route as easily as maybe some of those other guys. He's a great returner. So I love his versatility. I love his playmaking ability. But I think he's one of the few guys who I think there's a lot of untapped upside and potential for him to still get a lot better than we've seen right now. And that's what kind of has me excited about him.
No, and I won't disagree with you. And that really comes down to, do you think he's going to land in the right spot? I mean, I see him more in a West Coast option route scheme. I think he's great for an RPO team. So if you're a run pass option team, he should be your target wide receiver. I think he has that type of capability. To Paul's point, you're talking about the physique, and I think the physique is important. If you're going to be a runner in an RPO scheme, a guy who's going to catch bubble screens, short screens, wide receiver screens, you name it, then you're a guy who has to be able to withstand contact, snap the football 17 seconds later. I think he has that physique to do that. So, Paul, let's transition this now to a player that I think is, I mean, honestly, he's a player that's on the periphery. So I don't think we're going to spend much time. I'm going to give everybody a short synopsis on him, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk quickly about Chase Claypool. He's a player, number 83, Notre Dame junior, 6'4", 229. Last year, he had 29 receptions for 402 yards and two touchdowns. I just want to give everybody a quick synopsis on him. He's a player that should be on everybody's radar. I really like Chase Claypool. He was a player that I liked coming out of high school, and now he's starting to get his opportunity. Now that Equanimeous St. Brown has moved on, he's a player who could really benefit. So who is he, and what is he? Well, I mean, when you think about Notre Dame, again, they're a play-action pro-style offense. He's going to be a guy that I think is going to be, for the most part, in that number one role. He's going to be a wide receiver one. He's going to be outside the scheme, basically playing against the team's best opposing cornerback. He should be that guy. Or he'll be in the slot. It'll be one of those two positions, and they'll probably alternate throughout the game. His route tree so far has been, I mean, from what I've seen from spring games, from what I've seen from various highlight films from past years, he looks like a guy that's going to run hitches, quicks, you know, quick outs, drags, curls, digs, goes. I think he's going to have a pretty expansive route tree. So here's what you guys should have on the docket as you're watching him. His strengths, he has rare size. He's 6'4", 229 pounds. He's got that rare size, body control. He has play strength and contested catches. I think he's a guy who wins very well in contested situations. His weaknesses, I don't think you're talking about a very deceptive route runner. He doesn't stem his routes very well, but a lot of that has to do with experience. And that's his second weakness, experience. He doesn't really have the experience. But when you're talking about him from an athletic standpoint, I think we're talking about a guy with solid to good athletic ability. I think he's got good balance, solid flexibility, explosiveness, solid acceleration, and I think he has solid agility. And when you're talking about a player that's 6'4", 229 pounds, to have solid agility means that you're really pretty quick on the football field. So when I look at him as a route runner, the things I would say to you is, watch him. Watch him as he tracks the ball on go routes. He really does a nice job breaking off on the football and adjusting mid-route. When you watch him when it comes to, you know, high-speed change of direction routes, at the top of routes, he really does have solid footwork, and he does understand how to use space and use his lower body to manipulate DBs, and really does a nice job creating separation on quick outs and hitches. So watch him. And when it comes to hands, the first thing that jumps off to me is he's really got solid to good hands, whether he's stationary or on the move. He really has the ability to catch passes, whether it's above his waist or even outside of his frame. He really shows a lot of dexterity catching the football. And he has good body control in contested situations, especially. This was his biggest strength, in my opinion. He really displayed solid to good awareness of where the sideline was, and where the players were on the football field. So he was able to adjust his body, out-leverage defenders, and make catches. And really, after the catch, I thought he was solid. I mean, if he really relied, in my opinion, on his strength to break tackles. He wasn't really an agile player in the open field. He wasn't eluding players, but he used his strength, and I thought he was very good. So when it comes to him as a player, I think he's a role player right now, and a lot of that has to do with his lack of experience and his lack of understanding. He was a fourth or fifth player, I think, on a depth chart right now. I think he belongs in the flanker or slot position, but a lot of that has to do with experience. He's a guy right now, Paul, that I would peg for a meteoric rise. He's a guy who I think could really rise up the ranks. And this is a player I think probably belongs in a vertical passing game. That's where I think he fits best, and he could be a tremendous, tremendous red zone weapon.
Yeah, I mean, I think you painted a really good picture there. I don't really have too much to add. That size, that physicality, the body control, I think he's, you know, I thought some of the similarities between him and Arcega Whiteside we talked about before, but I just think Claypool's athleticism is what makes him a more intriguing type prospect, and I think there's more untapped upside and potential there that maybe we didn't get a chance to see based on how poor, you know, Notre Dame's passing offense was last year, that I'm hoping we get a chance to see a little bit more. But I thought you did a good job kind of explaining him there and setting the stage for him, you know, of the type of player he is now, and maybe, you know, what's really to get excited about moving forward.
So Paul, I'm going to throw it at you. You take Felton Davis. You do.
Sure. So Felton Davis, Michigan State senior, 6'4", 196 pounds last year, caught 55 passes, 776 yards, and 9 touchdowns. So what I like about him, I think he's got good size at 6'4", but right off the bat, one of the concerns is he's got to add weight. He's very thin, you know, 196 pounds for a guy who's 6'4". You watch him play, and he looks really thin out there as a guy who's got to add 10, 15 pounds, I think, you know, and I think if he does that, it'll also maybe help one of my other concerns, which is his play strength, his ability to, you know, use that size more to his advantage. Because I think right now he can't really use that size to his advantage because he can easily be out-muscled, you know, by defensive backs and pushed off, you know, his routes, you know, and at the catch point. I also am a little bit concerned about his route tree. I think it's pretty limited in terms of what I saw. But there were things that I did like about him. I did think his athletic ability was pretty solid to above average, or maybe even, you know, to possibly good in some areas. I thought he had decent separation quickness. I thought he had solid speed, you know, quickness. His body control, his ability to adjust in air, I thought was one of his strengths. I thought that was impressive for him. His ability to go up and get it. But in turn, I think him lacking play strength limited and reduced that strength to be an even greater strength, because while he did have the ability to go up in the athleticism to high point the ball and to adjust and good body control, I thought sometimes not having that play strength, he was unable to then finish in those scenarios. I thought he was good sitting down in zone coverage. I thought he would be a guy that was effective near the red zone, especially with his height. But again, a little bit concerned about his overall strength and play frame. When I watched him, I had some Josh Reynolds type vibes, that taller guy who could get vertical, could line up outside, could do some stuff inside in the slot. I also thought with the frame, he reminded me in some ways stylistically of Dante Pettis, who could play outside, could play inside, who I did have some questions about his frame and his ability to transition and be a big impact player at the next level. Obviously, he went really high, ended up going, you know, early part of round two. But there are some things I like about him. I think he can play outside. I think he can play the slot. So I think he's got a little bit of versatility to his game, but he's got to get stronger. He's got to fill into his body a little bit more, because I do think that would really limit him at the next level.
Well, I mean, I won't really disagree with much what you just said. I mean, for me, I thought he was best suited in that play action vertical passing game, where he's best suited to be in the slot, where he can utilize his size, his play strength, and the space that's available to him to like kind of attack that intermediate and deep areas of the field. That's where I think he fits best. I think he's more of a depth or role player, probably best leveraged from the slot. I think he's a day three guy. And to your point, I think his route tree, yeah, slant, dig, post. I saw some sail route. I saw a corner route. I mean, I didn't see a very varied route tree. I saw a lot of what would normally be seen from a more of a deep passing game type of player. But I do think that when I saw him as his weaknesses and strengths, I do think the biggest thing I saw that he was good at was his effectiveness versus zone coverage. I thought he was really good versus zone coverage. I thought he was solid. I thought he really understood where the pockets of and the pockets and windows for the quarterback to throw into were. And I think he did a nice job settling into those pockets. So listen, he's a player, in my opinion, there's more development that's needed, but I think he's a great player to keep on your watch list. So Paul, why don't we go ahead and move on to the next player? And this is a player that, I mean, you know, I'm very excited about. You know, I think he's one of the most underrated players in the country. He's not getting any love, in my opinion, and that's Bryan Edwards from South Carolina. He's a junior. He's 6'3", 216 pounds, and last year he had 64 receptions for 793 yards and 5 touchdowns. Paul, just because you know I'm emphatically in love with Bryan Edwards as a player because of what I think he can be, there's a little projectability in there. I'm not going to tell you he is right now. I'm projecting. I want to know, am I nuts? Am I nuts? You watched him. You know what I think of him in terms of he's a player I'm excited about, but I never really went into detail with you. Do you think he's worth getting excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I do think he's someone you should be getting excited about. And when I see top 10 wide receivers going into the college football season, top 10 wide receivers on your radar for 2019 NFL drafts, I'm a little bit mystified of why he's not on those lists, to be frankly honest with you. I get some, again, this is lofty praise, but I get some AJ Green type vibes when I watch him play in terms of his body type, his stylistically, his athleticism. Listen, he has some concerns. I'll start there. I think he's got to still continue to diversify his route tree. I think we've seen him in some areas, you know, show that he could be a very solid route runner, but I think he's got to expand upon that, expand his route tree. His long speed, I don't know if he has blazing long speed. He might be a guy that's like a 4.55 to 4.58 type guy, you know, eventually when he tests out. He's not that true burner, but I don't think that should really be a knock against him because I think he has enough speed. I think his athleticism is really good. I think he's got the ability to get vertical and utilize his body control, his ability to adjust in air, his catch radius, his ability to high point, you know, go up and get it combined with his play strength, his size and frame that I think he's a very effective player vertically down the field. I think he's got really good hands. I think he's got good suddenness. I think he's got some ability after the catch to make people miss. You know, I like his overall game a lot. I think he's a big time red zone weapon, really could be effective on fades. So I think he's, to me, his elite calling card is that body control, his ability at the catch point. And I think that combined with good athleticism, average to above average / solid speed, not a guy that can't create separation with his speed, just not a burner type. I think you combine that all and he's a guy who should be being talked about a lot more.
Well, I mean, you know, I agree with you. So, listen, I would echo everything you said, and I would add to it that when people talk about his route tree, when people talk about what he has to do at South Carolina, I mean, he was on screens, he was on drags, he was on slants, he was on quick outs, he was on inside dig type routes, he was on curls, he was on posts, he ran back shoulder fades. He ran from mostly the number one alignment. Paul, I mean, going back to skill position, right? We go back to skill acquisition, right? Everything that we spent all summer on. The player is only as good as what he's experienced. I mean, you can't just superimpose he's going to be an awesome number one receiver if he's had the same type of affordance of opportunity of space like AJ Brown, right? We love AJ Brown. But A.J. Brown did not play in press alignments like Bryan Edwards had. He did. I mean, Bryan Edwards played the number one wide receiver role on the line of scrimmage, pressed up against cornerbacks. He had those things going for him. A.J. Brown didn't. He didn't. And that's not to say he's better, but it's just to point out that that where they played, how they played, where they were aligned, those things matter, in my opinion, when you're looking at these positions and looking at these receivers. So anyway, just to talk a little bit about Bryan Edwards, my long story short is this. Paul hit on all the major points. The thing I would say about him is that there's not many weaknesses to his game. The strength, size, body control, catch radius, contested situations, play strength, you name it. There's a lot of things that he has in his favor, but there's not a lot of things that he does terribly. He's rock solid in so many ways. I think the fact that he's not getting anywhere near the amount of publicity as some of the other receivers is just criminal. He has so many elements to his game that are good. I see him better leveraged in a play-action vertical passing game. I think he's best suited to a flanker role. I think that would be ideal for me. I don't want him being Batman to somebody else's, you know, I don't want him to be Batman to somebody else's Robin. I don't think that's his game. Give me him as a top flanker, and I do think he could emerge into Batman, right? I think, what is it? Robin grew up into Nightwing. Isn't that a new career? I don't know what the hierarchy is here. Robin grew up into Nightwing. I do think Bryan Edwards, in my opinion, I find it hard, whether it be skill acquisition, whether it be through the lens of wide receiver, I find it hard to not put him in the top five no matter what I do. He's a player to watch, and he's a player that should be in everybody's top five.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy who is going to, you're going to see, I think, a big rise from him. And I think part of that is, you know, another guy we'll get to probably in a second part of the wide receiver preview is his teammate, Deebo Samuel, who got injured early last year. And listen, South Carolina is not Alabama. They don't have the litany of skill players that one guy goes out and you just replace him with another 4 or 5 star elite recruit, you know, and basically it's like you didn't even lose a player. That offense was built around Deebo Samuel and Bryan Edwards. And when Deebo Samuel went out, there wasn't a lot to really scare defenses. And I think it probably did have a little bit of a negative effect on Bryan Edwards last year, who didn't put up the year that maybe we thought he would and many other people did coming off of his freshman year when he seemed to have a little bit more and exploding onto the scene. And I think people were expecting a huge year last year. I think that Samuel injury really curtailed that big breakout. But now Samuel's back. And I think they're the best 1-2 combination in college football in terms of receivers. You can make the case at Ole Miss, and I'm not going to argue with you. I'll argue with you.
I'll argue with everybody who wants to say that Ole Miss's duo is better than South Carolina's. I'll argue, and not because I think that it's an easy one. I'll argue though. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, so I think that's Ole Miss is the one that immediately people come to that. If somebody said who's the best, you know, wide receiver duo in college football, I think Ole Miss is immediately the one that everyone's willing to say. But I think, okay, if you want to say that, but South Carolina should be right there. If not first, it should be second on the tip of your tongue about to come out. So I'm excited for Bryan Edwards this year. I'm excited for that whole South Carolina offense. We'll talk about Samuel the next show. We'll talk about, you know, Jake Bentley, who's a quarterback who I think could rise up a little bit in ranks this year too. So there's a lot of things looking forward to talk about South Carolina. But let's transition this to a guy who I know you have talked a little bit about on Twitter. You stunned some people. I forget who it was, but there was a couple of people in our industry who kind of saw your tweets about this guy. And needless to say, we're a little bit surprised with your praise and how you were talking about him. And then I had a chance to watch him, and you might be a little higher on him, but I was pretty high on him myself. So I want to hear your take first, and that's Dez Fitzpatrick out of Louisville. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's 6'2", 210 pounds. Last year, he had 45 catches, 699 yards, and 9 touchdowns. He was one of Lamar Jackson's weapons there. What is it about Fitzpatrick's game that has you thinking he is one of the top wide receivers eligible for the draft next year?
I feel like I'm picking rose petals off of like a flower right now. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. You know what? I mean, when you look at him, let's start with his strengths. I think it's when you look at him, it's mental processing, stemming of his routes, meaning his route deception, his change of direction speed, his body control, and his hands. So when you look at all of those elements, every one of those elements, in my opinion, are pretty transferable, meaning to the next level. I think being having a high football acumen, being a smart player, being a player that understands the game of football, I think that transfers. I think being a player who understands how to be deceptive within their route stems, I think that transfers as well. I think change of direction speed, that's something that I think is very much physically something that's a capacity, something that can be trained in the weight room, something that has to be developed. But I do think that that capacity to change direction with speed is just as much contingent upon their mental processing, their understanding of the game, as is their physical ability. You can't prepare to change direction if you don't know you have to change direction. So I think that's something that transfers as well. Body control and hands, that to me, body control is something that is really innate. I don't think every player has those physical traits to make body control something that I would point out. So everything I mentioned in his strengths, I think are transferable. When it comes to his weaknesses, I think there's elusiveness after the catch. I don't think he's a guy that wins after the catch. I don't think he wins after the catch. I think in terms of his exposures and facing press and blocking, there really weren't that many. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that where he was lined up. When you look at him, he was on a spread option team. He was mostly in that number two, number three position in trip formations. And his route tree was really like curls, outs, digs, posts, crosses, and goes. He's a guy that I think, I mean, this year he's in line to be a full-time starter, so we'll see how it all goes. But when I look at him, there's not many weaknesses to his game, Paul. There's just not. When I look at him as a route runner, he's very deceptive. I think he has solid to good deception within routes. He has solid to good mid-step moves. He utilizes good visual gaze, tempo, arm swing. He utilizes rocker steps, really well timed on those rocker steps to manipulate coverage. He knows how to manipulate not just one defender, but two defenders at once. So he knows that the cornerback in front of him is responsible for him, but at the same time, that deep safety is also responsible for him on certain routes. And he knows just precisely where to time certain maneuvers so that he's going to actually impact both the cornerback covering him and the deep safety. Now that's wild and hard to comprehend, and I get it, but he understands how to impact more than one defender in a single route. That's hard to do. So not only is he accomplishing all the fundamental tasks of being a wide receiver, but he's a very deceptive and intuitive route runner. I give him a lot of credit in that respect. His hands are very good in a lot of different respects. But Paul, I mean, listen, to all of you out there, if you're interested in seeing the full eval, don't hesitate to kind of buy our Saturday to Sunday football notebooks. Like, a lot of what we're not saying is in those notebooks. So Paul, I mean, I'm going to cut myself short just for time constraints. What do you think of Des Fitzpatrick? I mean, I'm spinning yarns about him. I'm telling you, he shouldn't be out of anybody's top five. I really am that high on him. Am I that stupid, or do you see that he should be in consideration for more of a, I guess I want to say, praise than he's currently getting?
Yeah. I mean, I think he should be getting more praise. I mean, top five, top seven, top eight, to me, it's really close in this class. Like, I mean, like Edwards and Fitzpatrick are two guys that I really like their game, and I'll finalize my rankings before, we do the second part of the preview here with the wide receivers, you know, but they're going to be somewhere in that mix for me, whether it's top five, maybe top seven, you know, but they should be in everybody's like top eight because of what they've already have accomplished in terms of the skill level and traits that they possess, and then the upside that they possess. I mean, that's really, you know, like when you're thinking about these guys and watching them, what transfers to the next level? That's what we're really trying to watch for in film. And you talked about so elegantly earlier, you know, this evening, and that's kind of what we're looking for. And I think you hit on Fitzpatrick very perfectly. The concerns were the ones you said. I didn't see a guy who was going to be a big yards after catch guy, who was very elusive, you know, in the open field with this, you know, agility and stuff like that. He only had 1 year of production. I think, you know, I like to see more of it. And, you know, Lamar Jackson was a special, special player at Louisville. I want to see, you know, even another wide receiver, Jalen Smith, who we'll talk about down the line in the preview shows. I want to see Jalen Smith. I want to see Fitzpatrick. I want to see them do that without defenses having to worry so much about Lamar Jackson taking off and being a factor with his legs. You know, where the secondary and those guys always had to worry about that. So, yeah, I want to see another year out of Fitzpatrick. But if he shows what he did last year, again this year, with no Lamar Jackson, I think he's going to really be a riser in the more of the mainstream popularity. And he's going to be a guy that you're going to start hearing the draft experts, the, you know, Daniel Jeremiah's, the Todd McShay, you know, those guys, you know, come October, late October, early November, you're going to start hearing the whispers that redshirt sophomore, Des Fitzpatrick, if he decides to declare, keep an eye out for him. He's got, you know, round one or day two type upside and ability. Because everything you talked about, the positives, you know, the athleticism, his route running, body control, his catch radius, ability to adjust in air, all of that.
He's the best. I don't mean to interrupt you, but he's the best in this class when it comes to double tapping along the sideline. It's not even close.
Yeah, excellent.
There's nobody in this class that can handle the sideline like he does.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a guy who, again, they catered to Lamar Jackson, who was so good in between the hashes that you saw a lot of Des Fitzpatrick stuff was attacking the seam, you know, right over crosses and slants, drags right over the middle of the field. Like, that's where Lamar Jackson made his living. Lamar Jackson, my biggest concern about Lamar Jackson and him transitioning to the NFL is throwing outside the hash marks. So you saw a lot of Fitzpatrick's big plays were where Lamar Jackson was most successful and most comfortable throwing. So I'm curious to see, you know, if we see him even expand his game already this upcoming year with a different quarterback under center.
So you know what? Can I give you one of my comps? So I actually tried. Paul's probably the best at comps that I've ever met. And I mean that, Paul. So I mean that. You're one of the best comp guys I've ever met in my life. You know where I put him? I'm going to give you a spectrum. Here's my spectrum. On the low end, I put him somewhere between Marquise Lee, and on the high end, Mike Thomas from the New Orleans Saints. That's who I see him as. Somewhere between Marquise Lee and Michael Thomas. That's where I put him.
Yeah, I like it. And you know what? This was one of the few guys that I couldn't see. I couldn't put an NFL guy right now that I thought I felt comfortable. But I kind of like those. I kind of like those because stylistically of who he is, where he can win, and his talent level, I think those guys, that range of players is kind of where he lives. I think Michael Thomas, the one thing I'd say about him is maybe a little bit more physicality and size to his game, but I can see why you're saying that could be, you know, listen, he's only a redshirt sophomore. He's probably going to grow into his body. You know, he might end up being a guy who's 6'2", you know, 220 or 218 or whatever. So I think he's got some time to, you know, become a little bit more physical and a little bit stronger, you know, would be the one thing that I see a little bit of a difference, you know, with him to Michael Thomas, but how he wins the different areas of the field, I can see that. And I also could see Marquise Lee. You know, he's got, I think, a little bit of height advantage and a little bit more size to his game. But stylistically, I like those comps. I like that range of outcomes. And let's just call for what it is. you know, both of those guys were second round picks in the NFL draft.
And they're both starters. And they're both starters.
Yeah. I mean, like, people might hear Marquise Lee and think that's a negative. Guys, let's not be a negative. He's an NFL starting wide receiver. He was a second round draft pick. He didn't hit the ground running because Allen Robinson kind of took the luster there. But Marquise Lee is not a bad comp. There's a lot of people playing in college football that would love to become Marquise Lee, who's now became a very solid starting wide receiver at the NFL level. So I think that is the appropriate range of potential outcomes for Des Fitzpatrick. So, Matt, let's transition this. We're a little bit over an hour. Let's kind of push through and do another maybe one or two guys tonight, and then we'll pick up in the second part of the wide receiver position show next time. So let's transition this to Jonathan Giles, LSU. He's a redshirt junior. He's 6 feet tall, 193 pounds. He transferred from Texas Tech. So the last time we've seen him play was in 2016. And in 2016 for Texas Tech, he ended up having 69 catches for 1,158 yards and 13 touchdowns. So correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, that's, we're talking Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, that was his quarterback.
Yep.
So, yep. I mean, obviously we know the offense that Texas Tech had led by Patrick Mahomes. I mean, they were putting up pinball like stats there, you know, in the Big 12. So, you know, Giles is going from that type of offense to LSU, you know, that's going to be a little bit of an eye opening for him, probably in terms of just the schematically and stylistically of the brand of offense he's going to play. When I watched him play, I thought he was a solid to above average to good athlete, change of direction, speed, quickness. I thought he had good hands. I thought he was a solid, you know, to above average route runner. I thought he had good length, even though he's only 6 feet tall, 193. I thought he had good length and a decent catch radius, good body control. To me, he's a guy who's going to win with his route running and quickness. I think he's definitely a guy who, is going to be a slot wide receiver at the next level. You know, some of my concerns, his overall route, you know, tree, I think needs to still be developed more, especially if he's going to transition to a full-time slot player at the NFL level. You know, the scheme at Texas Tech, guys at times were often very wide open. So we didn't really ever get a chance to see him in contested catch situations too often. He always seemed to be wide open on slants, crosses, and drags. For a guy who is a slot guy, I thought his elusiveness and change of directions, yards after catch, was okay, average, a little bit above average. I didn't see a guy who was going to make a ton of people miss in the open field. And his play strength, I think, and frame, I think, are a little bit concerns there. I think he's a solid player. I like some aspects of his game. I mean, obviously can't argue with the production, but production in college doesn't always mean production at the NFL level. And I think sometimes that's lost, you know, in evals, you know, in some regards. So I think he's a guy who could be an effective slot player at the NFL level, but I want to see him get a little bit stronger and show a little bit more of a route tree and how he does in contested situations. Because I didn't get a good feel for that when I was watching this Texas Tech film.
And you know what, Paul, I wouldn't really add too much to that. What I would say about him is, the only thing I'll say about Jonathan Giles that has me, I guess I want to say, not tempering my enthusiasm, but rather, I guess I want to say it's helping me kind of stay even keeled with his evaluation. And that is that when I watched him at Texas Tech, he was always at his best when he needed to be at his best. And what I mean by that is, one thing that sticks out in my mind is, something that I've taken into consideration, again, having to do with the skill acquisition seminars that we did, when he was in disadvantaged scenarios, what I mean by that is he was in scenarios where the cornerback was either head up or shaded towards his respective break point. So what I mean by that is, again, if I'm breaking outside and the cornerback is already shaded towards my outside shoulder, well, then he's in an advantage situation compared to where I need to go. So if I have to break outside and he's on my outside shoulder, well, he's in the perfect position to play that route. So I would say that that cornerback is in an advantage situation. Well, Jonathan Gyles, when the player was in an advantage situation, he was at his best. He was awesome. He actually showed amazing ability. So when he needed to be at his best, Gyles was at his best. So it's something to keep into consideration, because I'm going to tell you right now, SEC, there's going to be a lot of players that are ready to play. And I want to see what Jonathan Gyles does this year. So as much as I want to love him, Paul, I'm holding back a little bit, just a little bit, to see where he is as we go further down the list and see how he goes into this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you just said there was spot on. I think he's a guy who, listen, the level of competition, the defenses that he'll face, clearly in the SEC at LSU, it's going to be a big step up. And I think we'll learn a lot more about him. So I think you're right to have those feelings, you know, and stuff like that. So let's end tonight with one more guy. And then we'll start off the second part of this preview of the wide receivers with a bang, because there's a couple guys that we're going to start off the second episode with that are going to be real fun to dig into. But let's finish off this episode with Emmanuel Hall, number 84 from Missouri. He's a senior. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. He had 817 yards receiving last year and 8 touchdowns. Matt, why don't you give me the feel of what you thought about Hall, and then I'll chime in with a couple quick thoughts to round it out.
He might have the best athletic ability in this whole class. Straight up, period. Period. Print it. Put it in writing. He might have the best athletic ability in this class. And I know that's really high praise, but it's true. When you look at him, the way he releases versus press, his high-speed change of direction routes, his overall athletic ability in every dimension is very good. I mean, this is a player who I really like in a lot of ways. His weaknesses are why I don't particularly have him very high on scales. He really doesn't have great hands, and that's not to say that he's a terrible catcher of the football, but there were inconsistencies, things that I was concerned about, things that I didn't know what to make of. There were drops and areas of the field where I was like, I'm not sure what's going on. And that's not to say that he can't make those catches. It's just to say that in the exposures that we saw, that we have access to, hands was something that I was a little bit concerned about. And when I look at him as a player, I mean, route running, any route, give me a route, give me any aspect of route running, I loved him. He had good to very good releases versus off coverage, good releases versus press coverage, good execution on high speed change of direction routes, solid on deep routes, solid deception within route stems. When you look at his hands, this is where we had the most concern. I mean, he was a player who I thought had solid hands when it came to being targeted on curls and hitches, but anything else, any other aspect of catching the football outside his frame, sometimes he would make the catch, sometimes he wouldn't. So this is a player who I'm framing as a player who can get open no matter what. I don't care what route you want him to get open on. He can. I don't care if it's the NFL. I don't care if it's college. He can get open. But the idea of making the catch, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So it depends upon what you value and what you need. His yards after the catch ability, he was not a great guy after the catch. So he's not a guy that you can repurpose and use as part of your running scheme. So you can't say his athletic ability is something that we can retailer to a running scheme. That wasn't his deal. He couldn't do that. He really belonged outside. He was in bunch formation sometimes when it came to trips. He was the number three receiver. He ran some jet sweeps at times, some smoked routes, some curl routes, post routes, go routes. He's a guy that I think when it comes to the NFL, put him in a vertical passing game, put him outside the numbers, let him push that safety really, really, really deep, and let him make everything underneath available. He was a guy that I put in that Will Fuller type of comp range when it came to being his kind of like hallmark. His height would be Will Fuller. That's where I'll put him. And Paul, I don't know how you felt about him, but that's where I kind of threw him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you in terms of the type of player he is. I wrote down the name Traquan Smith from UCF.
I'm right there.
I mean, if you watch Traquan Smith, I mean, big time vertical threat there for UCF, had some good size and a solid frame to him. My one thing that, again, and I don't know if we're going to get a chance to see this much at Missouri, you know, with Drew Lock slinging the ball all over the place in the scheme that they play there, is I didn't feel like I got a vibe of whether or not he can do much in contested catch situations. I just never really saw him.
I feel like
every time I watched him play, now you can make the case that he was wide open because of his athleticism that you talked about, or partially because of the scheme and the offense that they run. And this, you know, so it's like, okay, we know in the NFL, he's going to be in more contested situations. And it's one of those things where you don't want to knock him. I didn't put it in the negative column for him. I kind of put it in the middle with a circle and said, I have no idea, because is he never in contested situations because of his athleticism and quickness, because of the scheme? So I don't want to say he can't be good in it, because the film that, again, we don't have access to all of the film that we had access to, I just couldn't really get a feel either way of whether or not he's a guy that, you know, where he can he make, you know, contested catches? Does he have the play strength to withstand playing in close quarters like that? We just didn't really get a chance to see it. So that'll be something that, you know, I think we'll have our eyes more in Missouri this year than usual, you know, in terms of evaluating Drew Lock. And that'll be something that I'll look for a lot here about Hall and see if I see him, you know, in those situations at all to get a better feel.
You got to admit, though, game. I'm going to interrupt you. You got to admit, though, when you watch him play, man, he can get open. Like, he just, there was, it almost seemed like there was nobody that could cover him.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, like, if he caught everything, if he was a vacuum cleaner, I find it hard to believe that he's not at the top of this list, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, he's some of his raw traits, and listen, he's probably a guy who's going to, besides maybe the gauntlet drill, he's probably going to kill the combine when he gets there.
Kill it.
He's going to be a guy that when we do our combine preview, he's going to be a guy on our list of, yeah, okay, he's going to leave the combine as a winner. Like, that's just, it's easy to see that. But we can't be misguided. You just had a whole seminar series where every expert that came on, what they keep telling us, don't overvalue athleticism. You put it into perspective in the context of the skill that the player offers. And we all get goo-goo and gaga over the combine, me at the most. I sit there for 4 days tweeting out like a madman. I love it. But we can't overvalue. If we're ready talking about his athleticism is his calling card and his ability to get vertical and get open, well, then let's not watch him at the combine and be like, oh my God, let's move him up the top of the ranks just because, you know, he runs a fast 40 or that. We know he's going to do that. Like, and I think sometimes it's easy to get swept into that sometimes when you see that. And NFL teams do also. I mean, we've seen Cordell Patterson get drafted where he did. We've seen, you know, Darius Hayward Bay get drafted where he is. So there's a lot of instances where the NFL gets swept up, you know, by metrics and athleticism and speed and stuff like that.
Where do you think he's going, though? Where do you think he's going?
I mean, I have him as an early day three. I have him as a day three guy because of that speed and that calling card. But he's a guy who, if he shows more, could move up. But he's also a guy that, you know, if we start to get a feel that, you know, they're plug and play, any wide receiver in this offense could do what he's doing, he's a guy that the NFL could really watch him closer and maybe even move him down. And if the drops thing becomes problematic, I mean, listen, a guy that me and you love, Sammy Coates, like, I mean, wow, you know, he's a guy that we said, oh, let's not worry about it, he'll be fine. Well, the drops never really were, the drops continued to manifest itself at the NFL level. And he quickly basically, you know, pushed himself out of favor, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny you said that. And like, I had, I tried to do comps again. I tried to be you, which I can't. And Sammy Coates was one of the guys that I actually had. I had somewhere between Sammy Coates and Will Fuller. That's who I had him as.
Yeah. I mean, I could see why you're mentioning those names. It's the same reason why I mentioned Traquan Smith. So we're living in the same world of upside and potential. But yeah, Sammy Coates is kind of the negative side of it.
Persona non grata, which I can't understand how that happened, but
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, though. But this is what makes it fun. And listen, we only covered 11 guys tonight. We've watched 14 other guys. This is a deep class. Guys like Emmanuel Hall, guys like Tyree Brady, guys like Felton Davis. You know, they're intriguing, and I'm finding a hard time even having them in my, like, top 15. And we'll talk more about rankings, you know, in a future show here. But, like, these guys, like, some of these guys, I really like their games, and they're coming in, like, 18, 21, 22, because it's a unique class that it's really the depth of it. We talked about, we thought the depth was solid in the last draft class. I think that was more of, like, name value. I think the depth of actual skill level is better in this class moving forward. And I think it's going to be fun to continue to talk about these guys, watch them during this upcoming year. And then let's be honest, there's a handful of guys we'll mention on our watch list for draft eligible who we didn't even really get a chance to dig in deep. Maybe there wasn't enough film on these guys, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and then there'll be some guys that come out of nowhere. I mean, it's going to be a fun draft class. It's going to be a deep draft class, which is why we already wanted to watch like 25, 26 guys, because we know there's going to be, you know, another 10 to 12 probably that we'll have to get our eyes on also, you know, before next year's draft.
Well, and I'll say this as we close out the evening. I think Paul said it perfectly. The depth of skill is really intriguing in this class. I don't think it's about the depth of physical traits or ability. It's that skill level, that ability to take what they can do and transfer it to the next level. And I know that for all you movement and movement science and skill acquisition people, you would say blasphemy. How could they transfer anything to the next level without any experience? You're right. You're right. But they have variability. There's a lot of variability here. A lot of these guys are very variable and adaptable in what they do. And they've shown it on film. This receiver class, like Paul said, I don't know if we're going to talk about these guys ever challenging the 2014 class. I don't know if we're talking about Odell Beckham and the Michael Thomases of the world, DeAndre Hopkins. No, probably not. But you know what? I'm going to tell you a lot of these guys are going to end up starting somewhere at some point for some team, and they're going to make a lot of hay. And that doesn't mean that they're all starters that you should all draft top of the list. Or don't get me wrong. But the talent level here and the depth of talent, pretty good in this class. Pretty good. Pretty good. Not transcendent, but very complimentary. Very good. Am I crazy, Paul?
No, I'm right there with you, and it's going to be fun. Like I said, like 11 guys in, and there's a lot of big names and fun names that we watched, and I can't wait to talk about. So, you know, if you like this show, guys, please make sure you get out there, rate, review, subscribe. I know, like, we continually ask for that, and sometimes we push you more than others, but now more than ever, you know, we really appreciate that. You know, that is the best way to support the show during the summer. And then obviously when the Scouting Notebook is launched with the rest of the premium notebooks, the rankings notebook, and then you also obviously get the freshman notebook and the draft projections notebook down the line, all, you know, for $9.99. That is really the greatest way to support the show. You know, we didn't want to do a Patreon account. We wanted to give you something to complement the podcast. So for $9.99, you know, we hope that everyone who bought it last year enjoyed it and comes back and buys it again, and we hope a lot more people give it a
different
try this year.
Paul, it's
as
different.
Well. Yes, it is different. And we'll talk
about it. Reformatted.
It's reformatted. We will talk a lot about that in the coming weeks here on Saturday to Sunday. We'll have a whole release show talking about it. We're gonna put out a preview of it on Twitter. So it's really excited. We've revamped it a little bit in terms of the scouting notebook, in terms of the format, not just being strengths and weaknesses. So we'll get way more into depth in terms of that. But hopefully you enjoyed this first show as much as Matt and I did and really got a feel for these 11 wide receivers. And there's going to be a lot more to come here on wide receivers. We still have another 14 or 15 guys that we watched to get film evals on. We got to share our at least our top 10 or top 12 rankings for each of us. We got to give our draft eligible watch list, and then at least you know, give you some names of underclassmen, sophomores, and freshmen that you should have on your radar as well. So we're going to do this for each of the positions, a couple wide receiver shows, a couple running back shows, a couple quarterback shows, and then at least one tight end show, and then a preview of the year, all in the coming weeks here before the college football season kicks off. So hopefully you join us for the ride. And Matt, any final thoughts?
No, I just want to thank everybody for taking the time. And I'll tell you, Paul, man, this was fun. This was a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be back in the saddle. I know you were very busy this summer. You did the summer seminar series. I was doing the summer stock report series. We kind of joined forces in the middle there for the Heath Cummings episode. But it's good to be back. This Matt and I will be riding together for this entire month of shows, giving you our thoughts on every one of these players that we've been watching all summer. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday Sunday.